It was a process to get Isaac Rebekah as a wife, but after they married, it was 20 years before she had children. Finally, Isaac prayed to the Lord in Genesis 25:21 on behalf of his wife because she was barren, and the Lord answered him, and Rebekah, his wife, conceived. But the children struggled together within her, and she said, "If it is so, why then am I this way?" So she went to inquire of the Lord. The Lord said to her, "Two nations are in your womb, and two peoples will be separated from your body, and one people shall be stronger than the other, and the older shall serve the younger." Now the struggle in the womb more or less foreshadows the constant battling between Jacob and Esau, and even the descendants of Jacob and Esau. And God says, and it's very important that we remember, that the older was going to serve the younger. That's God's decree, that's God's determination, that is the way it's going to be. Don't forget that. And so when her days to be delivered were fulfilled, verse 24, behold, there were twins in her womb. Now the first came forth red all over like a hairy garment, and they named him Esau. Afterward, his brother came forth with his hand holding on to Esau's heel. So his name was called Jacob. Now, Jacob means like a grabber. He was grabbed onto his heel, and that really describes Jacob in his life. He was always grabbing stuff. So, the first illustration of that starts in verse 27. When the boys grew up, Esau became a skillful hunter, a man of the field, but Jacob was a peaceful man living in tents. Now, Isaac loved Esau because he had a taste for game, but Rebekah loved Jacob. When Jacob had cooked stew, Esau came in from the field and he was famished, and Esau said to Jacob, "Please let me have a swallow of that red stuff, therefore I'm famished." Therefore his name was called Edom. But Jacob said, "First sell me your birthright." Esau said, "Behold, I'm about to die, so of what use then is the birthright to me?" And Jacob said, "First swear to me." So he swore to him and sold his birthright to Jacob. Then Jacob gave Esau bread and lentil stew, and he ate and drank and rose and went on his way. Thus Esau despised his birthright. Now I want to talk about that a minute. Wow. What do you think about Esau? Do you realize what he did? He was really hungry. He was starving. You ever say you're starving? Don't think he was actually going to die that next moment, but felt like he was. And so he wants the stew that Jacob, the homebody, has cooked. And Jacob drives a hard bargain. He said, "Well, you've got to give me your birthright." Now, the birthright would have meant a double portion of the inheritance. Esau, being the oldest, there just being two children, would have meant Esau gets two-thirds of Isaac's estate, Jacob one-third. Now, I don't know for sure if by selling his birthright, they just traded places, and now Jacob gets the two-thirds, and Esau the one-third, and so he essentially sold a third of the estate, or whether it means that he just gave the whole thing to Jacob, meaning he sold what's worth two-thirds of the estate. Either way, Isaac was a wealthy man. He had a lot of flocks and herds. We're talking about some really high-priced stew. I mean, wow. Of all things. What was Esau thinking? I mean, wow. Do you just sell a large portion of your estate for some food? Well, you know what he was doing. He was recklessly choosing his desire of the moment, kind of flippantly, kind of casually. There's something that was very valuable, but he really wanted something else right then. Someone has said he sacrificed the future on the altar of the immediate. People do that a lot of times. They will, you know, get themselves in huge debt that they have a hard time paying because we want this now and we can't really wait. And we can do that spiritually also. You know, he gave up a whole lot of stuff in his future here on the earth to gain immediate gratification of some desire, but Hebrews 12 uses this example of Esau to teach us a lesson. In Hebrews 12:16, that there be no immoral or godless person like Esau, who sold his own birthright for a single meal. We shouldn't be like that. Now, our inheritance isn't flocks and herds. Our inheritance, as by the way, Hebrews 12:23, the firstborn ones, we're in Esau's position, our inheritance is heaven, worth even more than Isaac's estate.
Amen.
And yet, how many people will sell it out for some immediate pleasure, gratification, desire that they just feel like they've got to have this very moment? Think about your pet sin. You have a pet sin? You know, kind of the one that you just have a hard time doing without. Been around a long time, and it's kind of the one you just keep reverting back to. I get rid of the rest, but that pet sin just kind of stays with me. You're willing to sell your soul to indulge in your pet sin? I mean, wow, you think Esau was stupid? And I do. But wow, lose out on heaven? For what? Having a little fun looking at stuff you shouldn't on the internet? You know, getting out of some jams by not telling the truth? You know, losing your temper because you don't get your way? I don't know, what's your pet sin? And really, is that what we're going to do? Are we going to sell our inheritance as the firstborn ones so we can indulge that whatever it is that we like so much right now? It was foolish on Esau, and it's foolish in us. Now, I want you to think a minute about Jacob. What do you think about him? He exploited his brother's weakness. He was cold and calculating and conniving, and he wanted that double portion of the inheritance. But I want you to think about this. God already said, the older will serve the younger. But instead of trusting God, he wants to grab it for himself in his own unethical way. He could have just waited for God to do what God said he was going to do. But no, he's got to aid God with his own unethical schemes. I mean, it was just so ridiculous. Not only does he say, well, first sell me your birthright, but that's not good enough. You know, you got to swear to it. You know, wow. I mean, he wants that birthright, and he's willing to do anything he has to get it, in spite of the fact that essentially God has said he will have it. So that's Jacob grabbing things for himself his own way, instead of trusting and depending on God. Now that leads us into chapter 27, where Isaac, you remember Isaac and Rebekah have favorite children, not a good idea, but Isaac calls his favorite Esau in and says, listen, I want to give you a blessing. I'm about to die. Go get me some game and cook it just like I like it and bring it. We'll have a meal and I'll give you the blessing. Now, it was not uncommon for a father to give a blessing to his children a little while before he thinks he's going to die. It was uncommon to just do it for one and not for both. So it looks like Isaac is sort of circumventing the custom. I assume he also knew what God said to Rebekah, that the older will serve the younger, but he seems not to regard that in his attempt to circumvent God's plan and give the blessing to the older, Esau. Well, Rebekah overhears that. She's got a knack for that. And so she lets Jacob know that he needs to act and get the jump on Esau. Now, she's got this plan that he's going to impersonate his brother and go in and sort of palm himself off as Esau and grab the blessing for himself. Jacob answered his mother in 27:11, "Behold, Esau, my brother, is a hairy man, and I'm a smooth man. Perhaps my father will feel me, then I will be as a deceiver in his sight, and I will bring upon myself a curse and not a blessing. That was not a good way to answer that temptation. Because what he basically says is, I'm afraid it won't work and it'll get me in trouble. He doesn't say what he should have said, it's wrong, I will not do it. You know, how many times do we try to get out of doing the wrong thing by coming up with some excuse that doesn't deal with the basic issue? Well, if I did that, my parents might find out and they'd probably ground me for a month. Well, is it wrong? Well, yeah. Well, then just say it's wrong, I won't do it. Don't blame it on your parents. You know, we tend to do that sort of thing. But when we do that, when we argue on the basis it just won't work, pretty soon the devil will convince us with his arithmetic that he can work it out. We've got to act and stand on principle. Rebecca's got everything all figured out. So she gets the kid from the flock, and she gets the best garments of Esau. And notice verse 16, she puts the skins of the young goats on his hands and on the smooth part of his neck. The problem is, if he feels him, he's not hairy like Esau. I'll tell you what, Esau must have been really hairy if the hair of the goat is what's going to make him feel like Esau. But whatever, she's got it all worked out. And after all, Isaac's expecting Esau. He can't see anymore, so he's just going to think it's Esau. Now, I want you to remember the disguise. He's wearing his brother's clothes and goat skin. So he came to his father and said, verse 18, my father, and he said, here I am. Who are you, my son? Ooh, he was not supposed to ask that. Jacob said to his father, I am Esau, your firstborn. I have done as you told me. Get up, please. Sit and eat of my game that you may bless me. Does he seem to be saying an awfully lot right there? You know, you can kind of tell sometimes when somebody's lying when they add a bunch of details that are unnecessary to the story. You know, they're trying to kind of convince you. Isaac said to his son, how is it that you have it so quickly, my son? Ooh, he wasn't expecting that one either. And he said, because the Lord your God caused it to happen to me. Now, do you see what happened right here? He was just going to kind of deceive his father by sort of just being there and letting his father think he's Esau. And then his father said, who are you? And he has to just tell a flat out lie, I'm Esau. And then his father asked, how'd you get it so soon? He has to drag the Lord's name into it and blaspheme God. Satan will always take you farther than you want to go in sin. You give the first inch and it'll take you a mile. You can't just tell one lie. You can't just commit one sin. One leads to another, leads to another, leads to another. We must take the stand, absolutely no, we don't budge one millimeter. When Jacob agreed to start down the road of deception, he did not know it was going to lead to absolute blasphemy of the name of God. Isaac said to Jacob, verse 21, please come close that I may feel you, my son, whether you are really my son Esau or not. So Jacob came close to Isaac, his father, and he felt him and said, the voice is the voice of Jacob, but the hands are the hands of Esau. Oh, he didn't think about the fact that he's been talking so much that he started to give himself away by his voice and calculated that factor in. He did not recognize him because his hands were hairy like his brother Esau's hands, so he blessed him. And he said, are you really my son Esau? And he said, I am. He doesn't talk too much after he finds out his voice is giving him away, does he? And so, Isaac says in verse 26, please come close and kiss me, my son. And Jacob becomes his father's Judas. And Isaac gives him a blessing, gives him everything, absolutely everything. And says, may your brothers bow down to you. He was thinking he was blessing Esau and circumventing God's plan. Jacob thought he was grabbing the blessing for himself, but he sure didn't need to do all this unethical stuff to get what God had already promised. There were terrible consequences. Esau comes in just shortly after Jacob leaves. That was a pretty close call. And it dawns on Isaac what's happened. And Esau is livid, and Isaac has nothing else to give him. He gives him a blessing, but it sounds more like a curse. And Rebekah hears about Esau's anger. If you don't want Rebekah to hear about it, you better just not say it. And so she gets Isaac to agree to send Jacob off back to their homeland for a wife. And so he goes, and he gets down there, and he ends up staying with his mom's brother, his uncle Laban. And he works for him in the livestock for a month. Now, Laban has two daughters. The older one's Leah, and the younger one's Rachel. And, well, he said in verse 16, Laban had two daughters. This is 29:16. The name of the older was Leah, and the name of the younger was Rachel. And Leah's eyes were weak. You'll see later, she's not the only one with weak eyes. But Rachel was beautiful of form and face. Now, Jacob loved Rachel, so he offers Laban. He says, I will serve you 7 years for your younger daughter, Rachel. Wow. Would you offer that? But remember, he has no real desire to go back home anytime soon. And it may be that offering 7 years of work as a dowry is a way of showing how highly he values her. She's worth 7 years of work. Laban said, it's better that I give her to you than to give her to another man. Stay with me. So Jacob served 7 years for Rachel, and they seemed to him but a few days because of his love for her. Then Jacob said to Laban, give me my wife, for my time is completed, that I may go into her. Laban gathered all the men of the place and made a feast. Now in the evening he took his daughter Leah and brought her to him, and Jacob went into her. Laban also gave his maid Zilpah to his daughter Leah's maid. So it came about in the morning that, behold, it was Leah. He married the wrong one. Don't you hate it when that happens? And he said to Laban, what is this you have done to me? Was it not for Rachel that I served with you? Why didn't you deceive me? Well, Laban said, it's not the practice in our place to marry off the younger before the firstborn. I'll give Rachel to you up front. You just serve another 7 years for her. Now, if you stop and think about it, he's kind of getting what's coming to him. Isaac didn't know that the son he was blessing was the younger son. Jacob didn't know that the daughter he was marrying was the older daughter. So he gets what's coming to him. He works 7 more years to pay off Rachel. So now he has these two sisters as a wife. And it's just a mess. Because he really loves Rachel. But God, who often favors the underdog, starts giving sons to Leah. One right after another, after another, after another. And in fact, finally in 30 verse 1, when Rachel saw that she bore Jacob no children, she became jealous of her sister, and she said to Jacob, give me children or else I die. Well, the problem's clearly not Jacob. But she's so frustrated, ironically, she will die giving birth to her second child. But she wants the children. Finally, she gives her handmaid to Jacob so that she can have some sons through her. And Leah ends up doing the same thing. Anything Rachel can do in the way of having children, Leah can do better. And then Leah has a couple more of her own. And finally, in 30:14, now in the days of wheat harvest, Reuben, which was Leah's oldest, went and found mandrakes in the field and brought them to his mother Leah. Then Rachel said to Leah, please give me some of your son's mandrakes. But she said to her, is it a small matter for you to take my son? And would you take my son's mandrakes also? So Rachel said, therefore he may lie with you tonight in return for your son's mandrakes. Now what you see is that both Rachel and Leah want what the other one has. Rachel wants children. Leah wants Jacob's attention and love and affection. So the mandrakes evidently were something that were supposed to promote fertility. Kind of ironic, though. Rachel bargains and says, okay, you can have Jacob tonight. That's what you want, and I get the mandrakes. She may get the mandrakes, but Leah's the one who got more children. So that didn't work so well. And finally, after the 7 years, Jacob's going to leave, but Laban says, no, I really want you to stay. Just name your wages. Well, they go through this deal. Basically, Jacob suggests his wages be the spotted, speckled, striped animals. The ones that aren't a pure color. The ones that are kind of, they're not colored normally. So he gets the weird colored animals. Well, Laban thinks that sounds like a pretty good idea. You know, and most of them are the right color, so that wouldn't be that many. And both of them have a plan to double-cross the other. Laban has this plan. He takes all the weird-colored ones out before he lets Jacob take care of the flocks and the herds, and he puts them under the leadership of his sons, so there's not much of a gene pool to start with. You know, none of the ones that at least show up as, you know, spotted and speckled and striped, are with Jacob. Jacob, though, he has his plan, too. You know, he wouldn't have suggested this if he didn't have a way to try to engineer this thing. After all, he is the grabber, and he's always got something up his sleeve. What he did was he took branches from trees. And you know how they are. The inside is lighter than the outside, the bark. So he stripped them. You know, he took, just left a section dark with the bark and then a section lighter that he stripped off the bark and then a dark section light. So these are striped branches. And he puts these in front of the animals as they mate. Because everybody knows what you look at when you're mating is what the offspring's going to be, right? Well, obviously, Jacob didn't have a way of knowing a whole lot about genetics. It worked. They came out, a bunch of them came out, spotted and striped and speckled and all those sorts of things, just the very ones he'd said he wanted. Now you remember that. How do you explain that? Well, we'll come back to that in a moment. Finally, after 6 years of that, he's been down there 20 years with Laban. He is fed up. Laban's been changing his salary every time you turn around. And yet, every time he changes it, he still gets more animals. And he can tell that Laban and his sons are not happy with him. It's not a place to be. So he secretly whisks off his family and his animals. And Laban eventually catches up to them. But God warns Laban not to hurt them. And so, in 32:3, Jacob, on his way back home, sends messengers before him to his brother Esau in the land of Seir, the country of Edom. He also commanded them, saying, thus you shall say to my lord Esau, thus says your servant Jacob, I have sojourned with Laban and stayed until now. I have oxen and donkeys and flocks and male and female servants, and I have sent to tell my lord that I might find favor in your sight. Then messengers returned to Jacob, saying, we came to your brother Esau, and furthermore, he's coming to meet you, and 400 men are with him. Oh, no. You would think after 20 years, he'd have calmed down. He apparently doesn't have news over these 20 years. It doesn't look like it. He finds out Jacob's on his way, and he's coming, and there's 400 men with him. He wanted to kill Jacob the last time they saw each other. He's just waiting for Isaac to die so he didn't give his father grief. Now what's going to happen? Jacob is scared to death. In verse 7, he was greatly afraid and distressed. And he does various things, including praying to God, which was encouraging in 9 through 12. But he's got another idea. You know, he's always got a plan. Look at verse 13. He selected from what he had with him a present for his brother Esau. You know, Husbands think that works, don't they? You know, send a present to your wife in certain delicate situations, and maybe flowers or chocolates or something that way. Well, he thinks sending a present to Esau might help. Get a load of the present, verse 14. 200 female goats and 20 male goats, 200 ewes and 20 rams, 30 milking camels and their colts, 40 cows and 10 bulls, 20 female donkeys and 10 male donkeys. Ever sent a present like that to anybody? What does that show you? He is scared to death. He's willing to send him a bunch of animals to try to avoid getting killed. But he doesn't have a whole lot of confidence that this plan's really going to work. The day he's dreaded for 20 years is right around the corner. And so, the night before he's going to see Esau, he knows that Esau's about there. In verse 24, he was left alone, and a man wrestled with him until daybreak. When he saw that he had not prevailed against him, he touched the socket of his thigh. So the socket of Jacob's thigh was dislocated while he wrestled with him. So, this man, according to Hosea, is an angel that represents God. And it really epitomizes the whole Jacob life. Because he's been wrestling with God this whole time to decide who's going to run things. Is it going to be Jacob grabbing things for himself, always operating under his plan? Or is he going to turn to the Lord and trust him? And all night long, the angel not prevailing, I think is an indication that for Jacob's whole life, he has not submitted to God. He's done things his way. Don't we all struggle with the Lord from time to time to see who's going to run things in our life? Well, finally, when nothing else would avail, the angel touches the socket of Jacob's thigh and cripples him. I mean, sometimes there's no other way to get us to see our need for God and to depend on God. God's got to cripple us. Finally, God has Jacob where he wants him, scared half out of his mind, with no plan that he has any confidence in of his own to trust in. He is scared. He doesn't have anything to go on. He's desperate. Until now, God hadn't prevailed, but now God's crippling him. God's sending Esau with 400 men. And finally, something happens that you never saw before in this story. Verse 26, then he said, the angel, let me go, for the dawn is breaking. But he, Jacob, said, I will not let you go unless you bless me. Well, that's different. Jacob hadn't seen any need for God to bless him up till now. For the most part, he'd pretty well been able to take care of things. He had a plan for everything. But now there's no plan he really trusts in, and he clings to God. He says, I won't let you go unless you bless me. That's quite a change of behavior. And God changes his name over it. He goes from being a Jacob, a guy who's trying to grab things for himself, to being a prince with God, someone who clings to God for his blessing and help. That was a significant change. And God grants him the blessing. Esau's in good humor, glad to see him, and all of that. The thing that Jacob has not realized until now is that none of it was him the whole way through. Now, why did he get the birthright? Well, because God said, the older will serve the younger. Why did he get the blessing? Because God said, the older will serve the younger. Why did he get all those animals turning out spotted and speckled and striped? It had nothing to do with those striped branches whatsoever. If you know anything about genetics, you know that. It was all God. But we think it's us, and so we rely on ourselves and our own plans instead of turning to God. I never saw this in real time. I don't watch the Super Bowl normally. But I saw it on YouTube or somewhere afterwards. People told me about it a couple Super Bowls ago. There was this kid that was pretending to be Darth Vader and had the wand trying to zap things. I have no idea what this was advertising, but apparently in the commercial, he tried to zap the family car, you know, with his wand, and he didn't realize his dad was behind him with the remote and turned the car on just at the moment he zapped it. The kid freaks out. He thought it was him. Aren't we like that? How often have we thought it was us when it was the Lord? And we're all like, oh, look at what I did. It wasn't us. Those animals had not one thing to do with those branches. It was all the Lord. And the birthright and the blessing had not one thing to do with those plans of Jacob. It was all the Lord. Finally, God cripples him to the point, God scares him to the point where he clings to God and quits relying on his plan. Will God have to do that to us? We're Jacob. Will he have to cripple us? Will he have to scare us out of our wits before we're going to trust him? Before we're going to see that we depend and need him and not our plan? In 2 Corinthians 12, Paul goes through a similar experience. When he talks about the thorn in the flesh, the messenger of Satan that was keeping him from exalting himself, he asked God three times to take it away. And in 2 Corinthians 12:9, he said to me, "My grace is sufficient for you, for power is perfected in weakness. Most gladly, therefore, I will rather boast about my weaknesses so that the power of Christ may dwell in me. Therefore, I am well content with weaknesses, with insults, with distresses, with persecutions, with difficulties, for Christ's sake, for when I am weak, then I am strong." Self-sufficiency is a handicap. It is a blessing when God brings us to our knees. It is a blessing when God takes away our self-confidence and our bravado and our feeling like we're capable to handle everything on our own. And if we trust in him more readily and quit relying on ourselves, maybe he wouldn't have to cripple us to get that job done. But it's only when we're broken that we truly prevail, that we're truly strong because we depend on God. It's only when we're crippled that we're truly healed. We all want to be successful in our own plans, in our own might. We want to be able to handle everything on our own. And what Paul says, I'm happy with weaknesses, with insults, with distresses, with persecutions, with difficulties. Why am I going through all this? Hey, it's a blessing. Because as he says, for when I am weak, then I am strong. When we are weak, we know we can't handle it. We turn to God. Being humble and trusting and depending on the Lord is critical for us to be an Israel and not a Jacob. God's wrestling with us. Will we come to rely on him, or are we going to continue trying to just, I got to know, I know what I'm doing, I got it all figured out, just let me do it? Or are we going to say, I want to submit to the Lord. His will be done. The weaker he makes me, the stronger I'll be, because I'll trust and depend on him more. What a wonderful lesson from Jacob's life. Unfortunately, it wasn't 100% even after that. Israel shows some traits of Jacob, and he's called Jacob some of the time. But it was a major transformation at that moment. It's one we need, and we need to continue in, trusting in God and not in ourselves. We're going to sing about trusting and obeying. Not ourselves, but the Lord. Are you willing to do that tonight? If you need to respond to the gospel, we encourage you to come.